Welcome to the Nerd Party.
She wore blue.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Missing Frames. I'm your host, Sean Eastridge. This is the podcast where we watch movies we probably definitely should have seen by this point in our lives. And I'm very excited about today's movie because this is a film that my wife, Sarah, has not seen. So she's joining me on the show for the first time since the first episode in 2018. Welcome back, Sarah.
Thanks.
And she's very excited to be here. This is a present I bought for you, Blue Velvet.
1 year ago.
Blue Velvet is the movie. We did not have it on Blu-ray. We'd been talking about getting it on Blu-ray for a while. And it was something you were kind of like, oh, I want that. I want that as a present.
Did I say that?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
That was how I justified the present
Sean
when I bought it for
Sean has a habit of buying me things that I might have said in passing, oh, that would be cool, and it's something on his list.
I'm pretty sure it was a very thoughtful gift that was
Happy
clearly
Easter.
From the heart from me to you, and I just happened to reap the benefits of it as well.
That was
a year ago, and this is Easter weekend.
Yeah.
So it was a year ago. It was an Easter present. We had just moved to Atlanta. We've officially been here for like a year now.
Yeah, April 1st.
It all came full circle, which I think David Lynch, that would just thrill him. He would be so delighted. So I'm excited we get to finally watch this. Really, I've just been begging you to watch Blue Velvet with
all
me.
All the time.
Because I just...
Why are you laughing?
No, I'm not laughing. That was it was a trick of the light. I have been watching a lot of David Lynch lately. This has been going on since pretty much
Twin Peaks. Or before Twin Peaks, because you wanted to watch the original.
Right. We were watching Twin Peaks together, the original show, so we could watch The Return, which was like mid-2017? It was like summer 2017. And I don't think I've stopped obsessing over him since then.
No.
So this has been great. So I've been trying to get us to watch this since then. And I'm very excited to watch it. I haven't seen Blue Velvet in a really long time. But before I get into that, I want to plug The Nerd Party just a little bit. The Nerd Party is a beautiful network of podcasts that Missing Frames is a part of. There's all kinds of things. We have Star Trek podcasts. We have Star Wars podcasts. We have Filibuster podcasts. What does that mean? I don't know, but you should check it out. Right now, Filibuster is doing a Marvel Cinematic Universe kind of marathon as we count down the days until Infinity War comes out. I'm on a couple episodes, so I highly recommend you only check out those episodes. No, but really check everything out and make sure you're following us at Join Nerd Party on Twitter and that you've liked the Facebook page. Keep up with everything and give us a 5-star rating if you like us. I highly encourage that. I usually ask people to do that at the end of the show. I'm going to change things up and ask people to do it now, just in case you've decided you want to give up already, which is okay, and I don't hold it against you. But to bring it back to Blue Velvet, I'm excited to watch this movie because it feels like I haven't seen it. I have actually seen it, but it's been so long. I saw it in college, in film school. And for those who have listened to the Twin Peaks episode of Missing Frames, they probably know my relationship with David Lynch. I'm going to repeat it here. But basically, my first exposure to him was a really good friend of mine, Matt, brought Eraserhead to college to visit me. He was like, I'm going to come visit you. We're going to have so much fun. And hey, I brought this movie Eraserhead. Let's watch it. It's going to be great. So we sat in my dark room. It was literally all the lights were off. And we watched Eraserhead. And I was terrified. And I had no idea what I had seen. And I didn't know how I felt. And Blue Velvet was available at my school's library. They had an awesome film library. And I was like, I'll check this out. And I did. And I enjoyed it. And part of the reason I enjoyed it was because it was more coherent than Eraserhead. It kind of at least has a through line. It's still got the weirdness of David Lynch, but I really liked it a lot.
And that was your first taste of Kyle MacLachlan then?
That was my first taste of him in David Lynch land.
Okay.
At least. I had a taste of Kyle MacLachlan in the Flintstones movie, which also features John Goodman as Fred Flintstone. We've been watching Roseanne, but that was the first time I'd seen Kyle MacLachlan. I didn't realize he was a good actor because not only, and it's funny now that I just am thinking about this now, but we were watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. for a while and he had been in season two. And I apologize in advance. I despised his performance.
And I kept
defending
him. I'm like, you just have to see him in something, anything else.
Exactly. And I hadn't really seen him in, you know, any David Lynch. I'd seen Blue Velvet, obviously, but it had been years. And I just didn't like him in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
It was a really weird take on a character. It was strange. It was like, off.
It felt like he didn't know what he was supposed to be doing. It was like very jokey, kind of tongue in cheek. And the show at that point was very like serious, like S.H.I.E.L.D. had just been dismantled and everything. So I didn't know how to feel about him. Now I love him. I mean, watching Twin Peaks for the first time, it was like, oh, my God, this guy's amazing. And obviously, the new season of Twin Peaks, he was absolutely amazing. I think he's one of the greatest actors of all time. I love Kyle MacLachlan, just to make that clear. Mm-hmm. But what's funny about this is not the first movie he had done with David Lynch. Do you know what the first movie he did with David Lynch was?
Blue Velvet.
I just said that's not the first movie.
I thought you were never mind.
No, so.
No, I don't know.
Dune.
Oh, isn't that a dumb movie?
Well, it has its fans. We know you're out there. It's another movie I haven't seen. I want to read the book before I watch that because I hear a lot.
But that's
of,
not the mini. There's like a mini series.
There is a mini series they did
too,
later.
Right?
Everything so Dune related Dune is dumb. At least until Denis Villeneuve comes out and shows
that
us
has
all,
a
what
fair
we've all.
Shot,
yeah,
I think.
He shows us what we've all been missing. Yeah. But I've never read Dune, so I don't want my first exposure to that story to be David Lynch's movie. But it was funny because I always thought Blue Velvet was earlier in his career. I thought Dune was like later on. He was like, oh, I'm going to try the mainstream thing. But it was Eraserhead was his first one. Then he did The Elephant Man, which is what really launched him to kind of like not just, you know, crazy, weird, interesting director, but now he's one of the great directors. Let's nominate him for an Oscar and all that stuff. And then he went and made Dune, which was even considered by David Lynch a misstep. Like, he was kind of like, I had no control. The studio was really pushing for a bunch of stuff. It's the first time I hadn't had Final Cut on a movie, and I'm not happy with it. But at the very least, it gave us Kyle MacLachlan.
Yeah.
And that was the first time they worked together.
Had a long relationship.
It might have been his first movie, actually. I think that's true. But they have had a long, fruitful relationship ever since. But it really culminated with Blue Velvet, which was in 1986, a few years after Dune, which I think was in 84. But 86 is a great year. I was born in 86. Aliens came out in 86. And Ferris Bueller. It's a great year for everybody. It's a great movie.
We should watch that.
We should watch Ferris Bueller for Missing Frames. Someday I'll find somebody who hasn't seen it. So we missed the 30th anniversary of Blue Velvet, but at least we get to watch it now, which is kind of exciting. When it first came out, it was one of the things I love about this, which maybe we'll watch because it's actually a feature on the Blu-ray, is Siskel and Ebert, who, you know, did, they were the big movie critics. They, you know, Roger Ebert, Gene Siskel, they were like, that was the first time I think celebrities or critics were considered celebrities. They had a TV show and they had the two thumbs up, two thumbs down gimmick that everyone loved. And they notoriously, Roger Ebert especially, hated David Lynch. And they gave this movie two thumbs down.
No.
And later on, I mean, the relationship between Ebert and Lynch became so hysterical. Lynch would actually use that review for a future film, Lost Highway, when they gave it two thumbs down and put it on the poster and said two more great reasons to go see our movie, which I think is brilliant. But they actually included the review Siskel and Ebert did on the Blu-ray as a feature. So we'll have to watch.
That's hilarious.
That. I think that's amazing.
Now, did they have like an actual jokey relationship or was it hostile?
No, it was Ebert was a critic and Lynch was, I don't think, eventually Ebert would jump on board the bandwagon. Yeah. Like, I think the first one he really loved was The Straight Story, which ironically is, I think, Lynch's most straightforward film. But then Mulholland Drive he was on board with. I think
Mulholland's weird.
Yeah.
So
I think at this point in time, Ebert just did not know what to make of him.
Yeah.
It was kind of off-putting. Ebert was real. This film is very disturbing. For a long time, it couldn't get financed because people were so put off by the violence, a lot of sexual stuff going on. It's a very disturbing film, which isn't surprising when you consider David Lynch.
Yeah.
It's a David Lynch movie. But I think Ebert was really put off. And very disturbed by its content. Like he I don't want to spoil anything, but he goes after a particular element of the movie as like, it's like his, basically his hill to die on. Like, he's like, this is this movie, why it's terrible. It's horrible. David Lynch is a terrible person, blah, blah, blah. Like was like, he really went after this movie. And
so
Lynch.
He made it personal.
Yeah. I mean, it was and Ebert is a great critic, but sometimes he would kind of get a little too personal and kind of take it personally. But it'll be interesting to watch again. I, like I said, I don't remember the movie. I remember specific things about the movie. And it doesn't surprise me, but considering the movies that Ebert has loved since, it's just kind of funny how it kind of really rubs that chord. But are you, what's your relationship with Blue Velvet? Have you obviously you haven't seen it, but like, what do you know about it?
I don't know too much. I know, obviously Kyle MacLachlan is in it. I know Laura Dern is in it.
Yeah, this is the first time they worked together as well.
And I know that they dated because they met and they dated for like 4 or 5 years.
Did they?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Think about that Twin Peaks scene in the hotel. Oh, yeah. Must be real awkward.
Oh, how sweet.
But like, I think that's it. I mean, I know it's like one of the weird Lynch movies, like the rest of them. And I know like I could describe the cover of the movie, but that's pretty much it. I really don't know. I think there's a mystery. That's about it.
So,
I don't know too much.
Are you expecting to like it, or what do you think? What do you expect?
Yeah, well, I mean,
I
loved Mulholland Drive, so if it's anything like that, we're good. And if it's anything like Twin Peaks, loved that. I love the old, love the new.
Yeah. So we are. You've also
seen. I expect to like it.
You've also seen Eraserhead. Do you want this to be more Twin Peaks or more Eraserhead?
More Twin Peaks.
Okay.
I need a little more plot.
I think you'll be okay then.
Yeah.
Although, like I said.
I mean, I didn't dislike Eraserhead. It was just so bizarre. I need to connect with the movie a little bit, and I couldn't get there.
It's a nightmare movie.
Yeah.
You are plunged into a world you don't understand. And
yeah. And I would like to see it again, because I've only seen it the once. But yeah, I have high hopes. I mean, it has Laura Dern and Kyle MacLachlan. I adore both of them.
Yeah. It'll be fun to watch, because I feel like I've been seeing Laura Dern
like
in a lot.
Yeah.
I've been seeing, in The Last Jedi.
Yeah.
She's been all over the place. She was in, what's that show you watch? Is it Big Little
Big
Lies?
Big Little Lies, and she was fantastic.
And it feels like she's been doing a lot lately. And this was one of her first big things.
Yeah.
First time she'd worked with David Lynch, I believe. I'm excited to go back and watch it just to see all these little babies together hanging out, because I admire all of them so much. Before we sign off and go to watch this movie, I asked you to do something for me.
Yeah.
I don't ask for a lot.
He asks for so much, guys. He's lying to you right now.
We're going
to
cut this whole part out. But I asked you just because you have to put up with my obsessions.
Yeah.
People see this. People who are friends with me on Facebook, or people who follow me on Twitter at @YeShawnDerman, they see this. They can see me go through phases.
Yeah.
But you experience the full brunt of them.
Yes.
And David Lynch has been going on for a while. And David Lynch is a strange headspace to be in. But I asked you to write something just for the fun of it. Describing how you interpret my relationship with David Lynch. I've not seen this. I think you just wrote it.
Wrote it at the kitchen counter while shooting daggers at you.
Yeah, she was not happy that I
don't like getting homework assignments, okay?
It's
too much pressure.
This is all for the greater good.
And your obsession is just my normal life. This is not anything new. This is the last 5-6 years. It's just Sean fixates on something, and he lives it, he eats it, he breathes it. And that's just how it goes.
It's my life.
Yes.
And now you will experience that obsession through Sarah's interpretation.
Yeah, okay. So I just wrote a couple things, nothing spectacular, about my husband's obsession with David Lynch. Just a couple bullet points, if you will. All right. If David Lynch's name is on something, he will buy it. We will probably end up in the poorhouse because of Mr. Lynch. Number two.
Oh, it's okay. It's a list. All right.
He has removed all of the David Lynch books and DVDs from our local library and holds them hostage with 4 renewals per item. I'm sure there are library patrons out there that hate him.
hate me more or less than you?
I'm not sure. And my final thought is, if Sean had the opportunity to romantically run away with Kyle MacLachlan, he would leave me in a heartbeat.
Well, what does that have to do with David Lynch? It's true. I mean, that is true, but I'm going to have to knock
it
you a point.
It has everything to do with David Lynch, right? Because it's the only reason you like Kyle MacLachlan.
No, I like Kyle MacLachlan. He's
the
only reason cool,
you discovered that
dad.
You liked him was because of David Lynch.
That's true. He did
mic
open the
drop.
Door. Mic drop. But please don't drop that mic.
I won't.
I can't. I don't know.
But that's it. That's all right. I got. If I had more time, I probably could have thought of more things. But
no, that's perfect.
We're going to be poor. We're unhappy. I have to deal with a crazed Lynch lunatic in my house. And it's great.
I think you're going to love this movie, Sarah.
Now available to own on video cassette.
Blue Velvet is a movie that really challenges you to think about your reactions to it. And my reaction is, I think this movie is cruelly unfair to its actors. It was directed by David Lynch, the same man who made Eraserhead and Dune. And he's a talented director. You can see that here in scenes that have a lot of power. But he asked Isabella Rossellini in this movie to be undressed and humiliated on the screen, as few actresses ever have been, certainly in non-porno roles. Sure, the movie's well made, but the more I thought about it, the less I liked it.
Well, I liked it, and I thought about it a lot. And I think you may be on the wrong tack in trying to feel sorry for Isabella Rossellini, because after all, she consented to do what she did on the screen, number one. Number two, I'm sure she's walking around wherever she lives, New York City or whatever, and survived the whole experience. This did for me what Psycho did, as a lot younger, which is eyes open and, oh, my God, we're really getting in over our heads. And that's an experience which is challenging, shocking, but mesmerizing, and I like the picture.
It seems to me that we can't divorce our reactions. It's not how Isabella Rossellini reacts to the fact that she's standing there nude and humiliated on the lawn of the police captain's house with lots of people watching. It's how I react. And that's painful to me, to see a woman treated like that. And I want to know that if I'm feeling that pain, it's for a reason that the movie has, other than simply to cause pain to her.
He's a director, and he wants to play you like all the directors, the great directors want to do. He wants to play you like a piano, which is have you smile and then swing you right into some depression.
Yeah, well, the next time somebody wants to play me like a piano, he'd better get some music that's worth listening to.
And we're back. We're finished watching Blue Velvet. Sarah, what did you think?
That was a wild ride, for sure.
It's a one sentence you could use to describe pretty much all of his movies.
Yeah. Yeah, I am still processing a lot, so this might be a good therapy session.
This is going to be good.
I think it's always good
to talk things through.
I need to talk this out because...
Yeah, Lynch's movies are always great because you tend to... It's almost like you say, you think you're good. You're like, okay, I think it was good. But then I did it, and you start going off on a tangent, and then before you realize it, 3 hours have passed. Hopefully, now, this is a podcast, we try to keep it within a certain time limit. Hopefully, this won't be 3 hours. But still, there's plenty to unwrap and unravel. This is brilliant. I mean, I hadn't remembered a lot of it, the connective tissue. There are scenes I can't forget. Like any of the Blue Velvet scenes with Dennis Hopper.
Oh my God.
And Isabella Rossellini. Is that how you say your name? I feel like I'm mispronouncing it.
I think that's right.
That sounds about right. I'm going to look it up real quick and make sure. Isabella Rossellini. Wow. I am shocked I said that correctly.
You're very cultured.
I'm also shocked because it's pretty straightforward just looking at the spelling of it. It shouldn't be too hard to say. Any scene with the two of them together, I remembered. Those were the most striking scenes. I remembered the ending where she shows up nude on Kyle's front porch and all the stuff with her being crazy and delusional. But I remember being very struck by its violence and its sexuality.
Yeah.
It's a very sexual film.
It is not afraid to go.
No.
Anywhere.
I'd forgotten just how much so. I knew it was. I remembered it because it was very striking, but just the intensity of the scene between her and Kyle when she makes him get undressed. I was like, oh my God, I forgot about this.
Well, whenever I see movies that are very sexually explicit like this one, I always think about the actors and how much trust they must really have in the director and the people around them, because that is a very vulnerable place to be, especially in this film where it's violent and it's it's crazy and just it's very infused with emotion.
Yeah. And the funny thing about David Lynch, people who aren't as crazily obsessed with him as I am,
right,
probably think he's a nut job.
No, and like, he's the scary sweetest and, man yeah, of
you,
life.
You watch interviews with him; he's very eloquent and sweet, and he's got a Southern gentleman charm yeah. to him. And he
very
talks
thoughtful
like
person.
This, very thoughtful. Everyone who's worked with him loves him,
yeah.
like, adores him. Females especially
yeah.
like because he's extremely attractive that hair is incredible
yeah
but really like you know what's funny about this and I have to kind of correct myself well I have to well actually to steal that from John Mills and Craig Sorrell's words with Nerds I have to well actually myself I said Siskel and Ebert when they reviewed it they both hated it. Siskel actually loved it.
Yeah.
And I forgot that until we watched the bonus feature on the,
yeah.
the Blu-ray which
thank
is
God
there.
For bonus features.
I know what a great review. But Siskel basically
he defended it for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, he defended it and yeah. he called out what again what I believe you know with a film the director wants to play you like a piano
yeah.
or a violin and Ebert retorts well he better pick a song that I like about I can't remember what he said but it was so scathing.
Something quippy
but Ebert really honed in on
yeah.
the violence directed at Dorothy's character Isabella Rossellini's character because she is brutalized she's humiliated she's nude on screen mm-hmm. a good chunk of it like fully nude
yeah
and
it really struck a nerve with him
yeah he got very upset by it understandably so. It's disturbing material. It's interesting to me that a professional film critic, though, would be so disturbed by it. And when you connect the dots between Ebert's reaction to the film and Lynch's reputation, there's a disconnect.
Yeah.
Because as Siskel said, it's like, well, let's be honest. She consented to the movie. She knew what she was getting
no
herself into.
No one was forced.
No one was
yeah.
forced. And you watch it, and yeah, the stuff is disturbing. But frankly, I don't feel like it's pandering or it's being sensational for the sake of like being like, oh, look how sensational. It's not a Tarantino movie. It's no. it's disturbing.
It had a point.
It's meant to be disturbing.
Yeah.
And I think Ebert, especially in Lynch's early years when he would review those films, could not reconcile the sense of humor that Lynch had, kind of this weird, quirky humor that underlines the just absurdity of what's happening and the content on screen. And Ebert thought it was a cop-out. He kind of was like, I hate that he shows us these brutal scenes, but then cops out by undercutting it with a laugh. Like, he's like, we're supposed to be laughing at this? It's like he doesn't have the conviction to follow through and really address how brutal it is. But I've never felt that with any of Lynch's films. It's
no,
an interesting,
me neither.
It's an interesting interpretation. I wanted to ask you, like, do you feel like Lynch is undercutting or that
no.
he's not sincere in what he's doing?
No, I've never felt an insincerity to anything I've seen. Even some stuff that I haven't maybe really connected to or loved. I've always he has intention with every one of his lines, every one of his actors. Like, it all tells a story. Even if you don't get what he's trying to do, you know that it's on purpose. And I've always felt like he's just in control and he knows what he's doing. And I mean, for me in this one, the comedy, if you will, or the laughs, I was happy to have them because this is such a, I needed a little break. It's like,
right.
oh, I can laugh. And then I'd be like, why am I laughing? That's not really funny. That's actually pretty terrible. But I don't know. I think it was a really well-balanced film,
yeah.
even though it was totally disturbing. I think I was very audible during this movie to you. I was like, oh my gosh. Oh my God. No. What is she?
Well, the
no.
one scene
like,
where we both got really quiet because I forgot just how powerful it was, but it's the scene where she finds Kyle in her closet. She pulls it. Because
yes.
the movie up to that point is very kind of, you know, it's disturbing. I mean, you find a severed ear in a field and there's a murder mystery. Creepy things are happening.
You're in this idyllic Pleasantville type of town.
Right. It's a little
know?
Stepford Wives, so a little creepy.
Yeah.
But and you know, I love at the beginning you have like, oh, this beautiful.
The montage.
And it's Wilmington,
it's
North
Wilmington.
Carolina, which we both love so much. And a lot of great films have been shot there. I'd forgotten. I didn't know Blue Velvet was shot there, which is great. And when we go back, we'll have to visit all the wonderful places.
For sure.
We'll have to dig underground to find all those disgusting bugs.
Yeah.
But I love the opening is that shot of, or not the shot, the sequence of his dad having a heart attack.
Yeah.
And then you kind of pan underneath the surface, the idyllic surface, to underneath there's something grungy and scary.
Something
Scurrying around beneath the surface, which is what this movie is all about.
But it set the tone for the film in the first 5 minutes. It's perfect.
It is. But you know, for the most part in the opening, for the first 30 minutes or so, it's kind of this like Kyle MacLachlan plays this kid, Jeffrey Beaumont. He's very kind of bright, kind of chipper sort of guy, very curious,
yeah,
almost too curious. Mm-hmm. But he finds this ear in the field and he wants to get involved in this mystery. And Laura Dern plays Sandy, who's kind of his girlfriend. And she gets involved, too. And she tells him kind of, you know, oh, this girl, Dorothy, is involved with all this stuff. And she,
because her dad is the detective.
Exactly. So she's overheard some stuff.
Yeah.
And so they both get involved in this whole thing. But for the first 30 minutes, it's kind of fun. And another thing I forgot to mention pre-show is what's his name? Angelo Badalamenti. I'm so sorry if I butchered that name, because he's an absolutely wonderful composer. And this is the first time he and Lynch worked together. And he went on to do Twin Peaks, his legendary music for
Twin
Peaks.
And I think I didn't know this. And I go, Sean, this sounds like Twin Peaks. And you're like, good thinking.
Yeah, exactly.
It basically is.
It sounds so much like Twin Peaks.
It does. And it was so good. Because Twin Peaks music is the best.
Yeah,
music.
It has this kind of, the vibe of the movie, though there's something underneath the surface, is pretty like, it's like, oh, a detective story. There's a mystery involved. And then it switches so suddenly that we were kind of both vocally into the movie laughing, and kind of, you know, their relationship, Jeffrey and Sandy's relationship, is very sweet and adorable. And their performances
are
adorable.
Even though he's not in high school, but
she wrote down a single note for this movie.
Oh,
what was the single note you wrote?
So I always write notes for movies because I just have the memory of a goldfish. I forget everything, especially when it's my first time seeing a movie. So I got so involved in this film that I abandoned my notes app as soon as this had happened. But I just wrote down Kyle MacLachlan chicken dance. That was my first and only and last note.
It's just another moment you would think would be burned into my brain.
Oh my
gosh.
There's got to be a meme out there of him doing this chicken dance.
Yeah, a gif or something.
Because it's just a national treasure. I fell in love with him just a little bit more than I already was.
It's fantastic.
So,
part of me feels like that moment might have been improvised.
If it was, awesome, because it's so goofy and cute and hilarious.
Yeah, so the movie's relatively fun up to that point, and then it switches suddenly to this very disturbed.
So intense.
And we both got very quiet, and we kind of looked at each other, and we're like, oh God. I forgot just how powerful the entire sequence, where you first see Frank. He comes into her room, basically rapes her, and Kyle,
our friend Kyle
Jeffrey
in the closet
is watching from the closet. And then afterwards she kind of becomes very seductive and seduces him and makes him take off all his clothes and stuff. And that was before, actually. She seduces him, then she is brutalized, then he comes back out to comfort her, and she's still like,
yeah, because he goes and hides in the closet again.
Yeah, and then she's like, I want you to hit me. And he's like, oh my God, no. It's such a but this movie, what struck me about it, especially as I'm watching all of Lynch's films, this feels like the first one to really find the balance of Lynch's very surrealist mindset and the more straightforward, solid storyline. Because the movie's not necessarily confusing. Did you feel confused at any point?
No, I followed it perfectly.
Yeah, there's no point where you're not, with most of Lynch's movies, you're like, what is
I'm
happening?
Usually expecting to not know what is happening.
Yeah,
I'm just like, all right, I'm along for the Lynch ride,
right?
You know,
and this you can see how it's a precursor for Twin Peaks. I mean, especially I've seen Twin Peaks more recently than Blue Velvet up to this point, so it was very fun watching it and seeing like, oh yeah, you can see why Twin Peaks was basically, it was the next thing he did. And but he found a really strong balance with the kind of disturbing, like he has this amazing ability to, like, you know, you're walking around, it's a bright, beautiful day, and then you just turn a corner into this alley, or you go into an apartment complex, into a hallway that's dark and moody. These very disturbing, familiar images, but he undercuts them with such a strong, surrealist vibe that it's so disturbing. And it's the sound design, it's his visuals, but he has this mastery of it. But I feel like Blue Velvet is one of the first times where he finally gets the more straightforward storytelling and combines it with his sort of unique vision. It's an incredible thing. And that was what struck me the most about the film, is just how balanced it is. It's interesting because the production design of this film, you can't quite tell what time period it's being set in.
Yeah. I don't know. That was really interesting. And we were trying to figure it out and we couldn't quite place it. And we're like, all right, it's either the 50s, 60s, 70s, or 80s.
Yeah,
cool.
It could have been any one of them. It really, like, it's like the clothing and hairstyles are very 80s.
Yeah.
And then you have the cars are kind of 50s,
60s?
60s, yeah, bordering on 70s. The music is all like 50s and 60s.
Yeah.
And the world that the town they live in is very like 50s, 60s. Like,
yeah,
oh,
it's
the,
like
back
Meet the
in
Beavers.
The yeah, it's, yeah. It's or Leave It to Beaver.
Oh.
Meet the Beavers. The Beavers
Forgive
are my favorite
me, guys.
Family. Yeah. But
I need
it,
to
it's,
brush up.
It's interesting how it kind of adds to that dreamlike quality.
Yeah.
It's like you're never quite sure what's going on, where you are, what's
and just the
happening.
Color palettes where you get all those bright and then it just goes to dark and you get that twinge in your stomach. You're like, oh God, here's going to be another disturbing scene because
right.
the mood has been reset.
Well, ugh. Yeah. And I think it's amazing. I mean, Kyle MacLachlan, we talked about him before, and he's amazing in this film.
Very.
And you forget because...
He's so young.
So young. Yeah. He was, I think, 25, yeah. I want to say, when they did this. This was his second feature film, I believe. He was saying, I was watching the behind-the-scenes documentary, and he was saying, you know, the first screenplay I'd ever read was Dune, and the second screenplay I'd ever read was Blue Velvet. And
like, what do you even, what are you like, what, I'd be like, what are
this
scripts?
Is what movies are?
What are movies?
Yeah,
this
exactly.
is weird.
Do I want to, what am I doing? But I forgot how, you know, I have a lot of love for Kyle MacLachlan, so it's easy to fall in love with him, but you forget just how disturbed he is.
And yes.
He does an amazing job.
This guy has some deep-seated stuff. Like, no, I'm sorry, if I find an ear, I'm not like, oh, what can I do? Maybe I can break into some lady's house, hide in her closet. Like, no, I'm sorry. This guy, I think I was even like, we were like, when that scene happened, I kind of was immediately like, Sean, he's going to get himself killed. Like, I don't know what he's doing, either him or his poor girlfriend, Sandy. Like, they're going to die because they're in way over their heads. I don't know.
Yeah.
She was at least, she was kind of his like, hey,
voice of reason.
Maybe. Yeah.
She
maybe
even said, she's
shouldn't.
Like, I don't know whether you're a detective or a pervert.
Yeah.
And
he
was like, what did he say? He's like, that's for me to know and for you to find out.
Yeah. And I was like, a little bit of both.
This
then,
movie
I
has a lot of great dialogue in it. Like, yes. Very good. Like, Lynch's dialogue tends to be purposefully stilted. But I think in this one, he finds a really great interplay between them. And I think Laura Dern and Kyle MacLachlan's performances bring a lot of humanity to it.
For sure.
But they have a lot of really great exchanges. Like
they
that. Do. And that was one of my favorite lines. But watching his journey, I'd forgotten just how, I guess I shouldn't say forgotten, because in the latest season of Twin Peaks, he plays essentially more than one character.
Right.
It's not just the Dale Cooper we've come to love. He plays a very sinister character, and he plays a very goofy character, and
the man can do it all.
He can do it all. But I've forgotten how strong of a dramatic actor he is.
Yeah,
because when you watch this movie, there's a whole range of stuff. You get he's disturbed, he's fun, he's sweet, he's endearing,
I think he's a sociopath.
Yeah, probably,
honestly.
But I think this movie, you know, Jeffrey, to me, this film is kind of about a sexual awakening of sorts. He is finding himself pulled between the allure of this seductive woman, this kind of club singer who is caught up in this dangerous world, and Sandy, who's like the representation of the town, the idyllic paradise, the perfect girl who is just sweet and caring and loving, but not sexualized. So he's finding himself. Lynch has a very twisted view of sex. In any movie you see of his, sex is usually the key that unlocks something horrible. Something terrible is waiting right around the corner. Almost any movie, if you see it, it's usually undercut with something terrible happening. An Eraserhead, you know, a child,
oh,
like
baby.
Sex leads to
that baby
this
that won't
twisted
leave my nightmares.
Child, you know, exactly. you know, it's always treated as a very disturbing thing. Like almost It makes sense to me because Lynch is all about feelings and mood, and he doesn't want explanations. And love to him feels like an idea. Laura Dern, Sandy, it's like the feeling of love, the romance and all that. Whereas the physical act of something that's scientific and can be explained to him, it makes sense to me why he treats sex as like an ultimate evil.
Right.
Because it's twisting this feeling and turning it into a physical act and giving it concrete values in a way. So you see the struggle of Jeffrey, his sexual urges fighting against the pure at heart love he feels for Sandy. This episode is ridiculous of Mystic Fairy. You were saying, it's like, how can we not do an R-rated episode? We can't.
No.
This is PG-13. Yeah. Let's just say it's a PG-13 episode. But it's, to me, I feel for Jeffrey. I think that's a lot of Kyle. Like, I think his performance is so endearing that you can't flat out hate him, even yeah. when he's disturbed.
I never hated him. I definitely was kind of swinging between, like, I was scared for him and I was scared of him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think you're right. I think that plays to Kyle MacLachlan and his interpretation of this character. And I don't know. He's weird.
Watching women undress from a closet.
Yeah. And you're just like, okay, he's trying to solve a mystery, but then he's doing these things that you should not be doing.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then I think Dorothy's character is utterly fascinating, and their chemistry is insane.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just palpable in a terrible way.
Yeah.
But it is. It's very evident and creepy and sinister and still tender in a really weird way, because they had some very tender moments that were immediately, you're like, oh my gosh, that's actually a little sweet. She really needs someone to save her. That's the whole thing. She's a femme fatale, but she still needs someone to save her. And he wants to save her.
Right. He's attracted to her because he wants to save her, but also that kind of
that dark
current of darkness that
absolutely.
He's attracted to.
Well, it shows you they're tender and they're loving. And then he starts hitting her because she wants him to.
Yeah. It's like he
and
has
my
to
emotions
cross,
are just all over
yeah,
the place.
He doesn't
at this
want
point.
To, and he has to cross over into her world
yeah.
to get what he wants. And then again, and I
so
speak
twisted.
Of McLaughlin's performance, just the moment when he's in his bedroom after he's been humiliated and beaten, and Dennis Hopper has kissed him and he has
yeah.
lipstick all over and he's been beaten nearly to death. The moment when he's alone in his room and he just breaks down is like, ugh,
yeah,
it's heartbreaking.
It is.
And you, the guy's disturbed, but you get the sense of a morality to him that makes it hard to just say like, oh, I hate this guy. You feel for him so
he's
much.
He's just caught up in it.
Yeah. And that Laura Dern, she was 18 when she made this movie.
She's so cute.
She's adorable.
She's
and
adorable.
She's so good. And I mean,
yeah,
this
great.
This was the start of a long and fruitful relationship with Lynch. And, she's so good. And that's a character, again, very, she's not actively involved in a lot of the action, but she does such a great job of embodying that character and that pureness, but also the kind of reality and trying to bring him back to the realistic point of view about his situation.
Yeah. I think for me, she represented the audience. Like you're kind of like, oh God, don't do that. And she's like, hey, Jeffrey, don't do that. And you're like, oh, thank God. She's saying something.
She's, if
you
Jeffrey's
know.
Dorothy's savior, she's kind of...
Yeah.
Sandy is Jeffrey's savior.
She's trying to keep him
They're
grounded.
They're all trying to pull each other out of hell.
Yeah. And back into Wilmington.
Back into Wilmington, North Carolina, which is basically heaven. But
yeah.
So speaking of performances, we also have Dennis Hopper.
Ugh.
Ugh.
I'm going to have nightmares about that man. I only remember him from Hoosiers.
A
little bit different of a character.
And we'd watched him in True Romance in an
yes.
earlier episode where he's like a sweet father who, you know, loves his son so much. But in this, he's absolutely terrifying.
Oh, my god!
And this was one of his first performances, if not his first gig after he'd gotten out of rehab, because he had drug problems, he had drinking problems. So he had just jumped out into the world, and apparently his agent got the script and was like, no, this is an irredeemable, this character is not redeemable in any sense.
Yeah.
And Hopper was like, it's David Lynch though, and I love David Lynch.
He's, I mean,
and,
hey, smart move.
Yeah, he was like, this is an important director and I want to be a part of this
and
film.
And what a villain. Like, the villain to roll all villains. And, like, you know, if he's coming out of rehab, well, this is a great role to exercise some demons.
Right.
Because this was so intense, and just every interaction he had with everyone was just maniacal and just satanic. Yeah. You know, I mean, it was just the worst kind of evil. And I mean, did he have a split personality? That's what I was getting, where he had baby and then daddy.
Yeah.
Because he was baby and then he was daddy.
Yeah.
In that first scene. I wish I had looked up a little more articles.
Yeah,
but
it's icky. It's so disturbing.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't even want that in my search history, okay?
I know. But he, it's great that, I mean, this totally saved his career. And he won a bunch of awards for supporting actor for the role. And he's incredible. I mean, he's absolutely
so good.
Unhinged.
Yeah.
He's so dedicated to it. It's amazing what Lynch is able to get out of these people.
I know.
I mean, they're all great.
I'm like, what did you have to say to him?
Yeah,
my gosh.
But they are all so committed to the parts. And I just love that. Now, a funny story about one of the actors in this film. So,
okay.
Frank Hopper's character has three henchmen who kind of follow him around. You have Jack Nance, who is from Eraserhead. He plays the main character in that.
Oh.
You have,
he's been
all over the place.
Okay.
He was in Twin Peaks. He's the one
who's got the crazy hair.
Yeah, he has crazy hair in Eraserhead, which apparently he kept for a couple years while they were filming. I think more than a couple years. It was a long time. You have Brad Dourif, who is all over the place, an amazing character actor. He's been in everything from The X-Files to Lord of the Rings. He was Wormtongue in Lord of the Rings. But the third actor, his name is J. Michael Hunter. And J. Michael Hunter was a film professor at Regent, where I went to school for, I think, a single semester.
Yeah.
I forgot to say this in the pre-show because I only just realized it when I realized I forgot to tell this story. But the reason I watched Blue Velvet was because this guy was a professor at Regent for a semester. He taught directing to the
That's
students.
That's so funny.
And he came into class. Now, Regent is a conservative Christian school.
What a movie.
Yeah.
Regent University.
And to be fair, Regent has always been very open to showing films. Blue Velvet, I could check it out from their library.
Yeah, that's true.
It's amazing. They were always very, but it was a conservative Christian college. And Hunter, J. Michael Hunter, comes in and teaches the class. And one of the first stories he tells them, and one of my friends who was in the class told me later, he goes in and he's telling them the story of how he got the part in this movie as one of the henchmen. And he was going to audition for Lynch, and he said, I know I'm a tough guy, a brutal guy, and he's like, how am I gonna get this part? What's gonna make me rise above the pack? And he said he walked into the audition room and just walked right up to David Lynch and said, hey, David Lynch, f- you. And David Lynch said to him, he goes, hey, f- you, man, you got the part.
Oh my God.
That's it. And he told this story in class, not censored, as it is censored on this episode. Imagine the mindset of a very conservative school. It's clear why he only taught for, one or two semesters. But I was so upset. I was like, oh, man, I wish I was in this guy's class. But I think that inspired me to go end up watching Blue Velvet.
That's amazing.
Which is great. But I think it's so funny that I have that kind of Kevin Bacon-esque connection to this movie,
to your hero.
But it's funny that Dennis Hopper's character says the F word a lot in this movie. But Lynch, who is not a prude but very southern gentleman, he would work with Dennis Hopper, and he'd be directing them, and he said, okay, and then you say your line and you say that word. And he would never say the word on set. And he would always, it was always that word. And Dennis Hopper thought it was so funny because he's like, oh, Lynch is so polite. But Lynch was basically like, the atmosphere was so charged already. I didn't want to add to it by using that word. So kind of thoughtlessly and throwing it around on set a lot. But I do think that's kind of funny. But so as far as great scenes from this movie, great moments, do you have one that stands out as iconic, as the one you would use to sell this movie?
Oh God, I don't know if I would use it. I mean, what scene could use as a selling point? They're all so disturbed. They're gonna be like, pass. No, this isn't a sellable scene, but my personal favorite is when Dorothy shows up naked and battered. This already sounds terrible what I'm saying. It's my favorite. But a couple things. She is so vulnerable and scared, And she's like clinging to Jeffrey, yeah. And it's just very moving and sad. And like, obviously you just learned she's talking about, I think Don, who's her husband, has been killed or,
his ear was the one that had been chopped off.
And, but she says something about like his head. And so you kind of like, okay, she just saw her husband die in front of her. Who knows about what's happening with her kid? Mm-hmm. And obviously she is just at the lowest point. So that's very moving. But then it gets a little funny because I can't remember exactly what
one of the lines I don't know.
Standing there.
Yeah, one of the lines I don't know if we can repeat on the show. You can look it up. It has the word disease in it. That's
all
we'll say.
I have the line. I'll say it and we can bleep it if
I don't think we can say
it.
We won't say it. Just look up the line. It has the word disease in it. If you've seen the movie, you know
go
exactly
YouTube
what we're talking
this.
About. It's not obscene as in there's swear words in it, but it's obscene enough that I don't think it's appropriate.
Basically, what happens is through some comedic timing, Sandy, Laura Dern's character, finds out that there is definitely a...
affair going on.
An affair. On between Dorothy and
Jeffrey's trying to play it off as like, oh, this woman,
And she's like clinging to him naked, saying like, I love you. And like,
and he's
very
trying to play
funny
it off.
And he's like, oh, yes.
What is it she says that is so funny? Because you burst out laughing. When
I
she's,
don't remember.
She says, my secret lover.
Oh, my secret love.
My secret
she's
love.
Like, so you're wondering, you're like, oh, no, is Sandy going to find out? And then she goes, my secret love. Yeah. And it's like, oh, my God.
It's like the worst family dinner scene ever.
It's just the perfect time to, like, actually use exposition.
Yes.
Like, it's like, yeah, say exactly what's going on for comedic timing.
Right, exactly. And again, this is something that Ebert never really...
He couldn't wrap his head around it. Yeah.
Humor is not the fact that it's like, it's a joke, but it's the absurdity of the situation. Just like, you have this very kind of almost sitcom-y, it is a very sitcom moment.
Yeah.
Uh-oh, we found out about the other woman, but it's so disturbed and upsetting. But then you have her, like, Jeffrey's trying to play it off as like, oh, I'm comforting her. And then she's like, oh, my secret lover. And it's like,
yeah.
Nice try, buddy. You're not getting out of this one.
You laugh, but then Sandy starts crying. So then you feel bad. I mean, David Lynch, he is the king of putting your emotions on a pendulum. And that pendulum is going 100 miles an hour. Yeah. Like, you are just swinging back and forth and you don't know what's going on. And I think that's, like, kind of the key to his movies. And I love it. And if I didn't make myself clear, I really like this movie. I want to watch it again, but like I do need a breather because that really disturbed me.
It's very intense.
I mean, you know, would we show our kids this movie? No. I mean, well, come on. Do you want to scar them?
Yeah, I guess.
I guess maybe at a certain age, like 20.
No, I'm kidding.
They can watch The Straight Story. Although that's super sad too.
It is, but it's a beautiful film. And it's a G-rated Disney movie directed by David Lynch. Those words shouldn't go in the same sentence together. But they do. And
that
the
was
movie,
his one and done.
Yeah,
never again.
The movie
back to my
is absolutely beautiful. It's hard to pick favorite scenes. I mean, favorite in terms of how loosely am I using that term? Because favorite scenes, as in the whole sequence where Kyle sneaks in and watches her and she
so
finds
much
him
tension.
And she starts to seduce him and starts to, you know, do that stuff. And then Frank comes in and humiliates her. And that whole sequence is so effective and powerful.
Yeah.
It's probably my favorite. And like I said, favorite, not as in something I enjoy watching, but something that is so insane. Like, it's so beautiful and executed so perfectly, and it makes you feel all the emotions you're supposed to be feeling. But another moment is that scene where Kyle breaks down alone, where he fully realizes the terror and the horrible stuff he's been doing and what he's been caught up in and how he's been... basically he's been punished for what he has allowed himself to be tempted by. And his moment where he breaks down is such a beautiful, powerful moment and great, amazing performance from McLaughlin, who, you know, he is so good at playing like the goody two shoes and so good at being upstanding. You forget how amazing of an actor he is. If it's not clear, I know I mentioned Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and how much I hate his performance in that, but I want to be clear. I think he's incredible. And this is maybe, arguably, his best performance.
I think
it's really hard to
say. One of the best actors of our generation.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, I mean, he's just And if you haven't checked out the Twin Peaks revival, it's such a treat to watch him, whether you end up liking the show or not. I know it's pretty polarizing for fans of the original series, but just to see him play all these different characters, and he executes them with like precision. They are so good.
It's incredible. Yeah. I mean, he's just a genius.
Yeah.
But and then another one of my favorite moments is just a tossed off line at the very beginning where he's like, I found an ear in a field, and he walks it over to the detective and Sandy's dad.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, let's see what you have here. And he opens up the bag and he goes, looks back up at him and just very casually says, yep, that's an ear. All right. It's just so funny. Again, just the subtle humor. Subtle. It's not that subtle, but it's the humor that's kind of peppered throughout the film, and I love it so much. But I'd forgotten how perfectly this movie is executed. With Lynch, some of them, you know, if someone were to tell me they didn't like Eraserhead because it's too weird and disturbing, I'd understand. I still love it. I think it's a perfect film, but I get it. Blue Velvet is one where I think he found the perfect way to communicate his sensibilities to a mainstream audience, which is funny because this movie is not mainstream by any means, but it feels like the perfect blend of that kind of everything that he has explored in all his movies. And that's incredible. And what I forgot is it kind of has a happy ending, which is not the norm for David Lynch.
Yeah, his father gets out of the hospital.
Every Dorothy ends up with her kid. She gets reunited with her kid, even though her husband is killed.
Which really...
Sandy forgives Jeffrey.
Oh, I think that was my one thing where she's like, I forgive you. And it's like, what? Hold on.
But it also speaks to Sandy just how like good
pure.
She is. How much she loves him.
Yes.
And she is able to forgive him. That to me is... a great strength of hers, but I
I'm too cynical.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm like, funny. He was like, literally punching and having an affair with another woman like 24 hours ago.
Yeah.
So I'm a little unforgiving of that. But for the movie's
Kyle
sake,
McLaughlin.
I mean, yeah, I guess he gets a pass.
Those doe eyes, that chiseled chin.
Yeah,
how can you say no to that? But
and then you get to see the Robin again, right?
Well, that's
which
right.
Was throughout.
So
the,
that beautiful scene.
Beautiful scene.
Sandy's.
Yeah.
Monologue about like the dream of the Robins.
Yeah.
The Robins are joy, and you know, the Robins, when they come, they bring joy to the
love.
World. Love and joy, exactly. And so when the Robin shows up on the window, it's like really hammering the point home by that point is it has one of the bugs from the opening in its mouth. So this terrible, horrible thing that is scurrying beneath the surface has been conquered.
Yeah.
Like evil has been conquered. It's a very optimistic ending.
Do we have other David Lynch optimistic endings?
I don't want to spoil The Straight Story, but it is
okay.
A
so
very
his G-rated
film.
Disney
yeah, his
was
G-rated
the only yeah,
Disney
okay.
film. Literally going through the rest of his movies, none of them,
no,
not a single one has Elephant Man. I guess
I haven't seen
Dune.
That one,
maybe
but...
I assume has a happy ending.
I think I like the movies I've seen, and obviously I like this one, but I still had an issue with her forgiving. I'm like, this should not be idyllic.
But
like,
Blue,
hold on.
Blue Velvet, as far as his personal visions, like the movie, like Elephant Man is based off of true story in a book, I believe, or a play. This is of his personal works, the only one I think that has a happy ending. It's crazy, it's funny because, and also that bird, it looks fake. It's probably fake. And someone brought that up. They're like, is that a fake bird? And Lynch goes, no, it's a real bird. And somebody says, are you sure it's not a real bird? It looks artificial. And Lynch's response is, well, it is playing a part. Like very coyly. I thought that was great.
He's
but yeah, I thought that was interesting to point out that as disturbing and upsetting as this movie is, it does have a happy ending where everyone really gets what they want after going through horrible, horrible trials to get it.
Yeah.
It's ultimately uplifting. Everyone should see this movie.
I wish we got to learn more about Frank. Which
I almost
mean,
don't need
no,
to.
No,
me,
no, no. I
almost,
just mean there's certain things like his breathing apparatus. I thought that was really fascinating.
Yeah,
and it like
I think,
changed the
I think
pitch
it's
of
like
his voice
his,
a little bit.
His drug
it's
or something.
Drug.
Yeah.
And then like, so obviously he kidnapped her family, but why?
Yeah, there's a whole drug thing involved. I don't know if he kidnapped the husband to, it's kind of convoluted crime story.
Yeah.
To me, I can give a pass to things
I just
that
thought he was so fascinating. I'm like, I want to know more about him. He's, and then I'm like, oh,
you
no,
almost
I don't.
Yeah, it's like, yeah. I think I know enough. To me, when a plot is kind of convoluted and gets complicated, a lot of Shane Black's movies are similar, a completely different tone. He did Lethal Weapon and like Kiss Kiss Bang Bang and Iron Man 3. But I can forgive the convoluted plot. To me, it's almost like the fun of it is like, I don't understand what's happening, but I'm so involved in the characters and the situation that it doesn't matter.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But yeah, Frank, I mean, Dennis, it's an incredible performance. I cannot pull my eyes away from this movie and from the performances in it. It is so involving and so engaging.
We watched it very late last night and I was already yawning and I was like, oh no, I hope we don't have to like stop it in the middle. But then I just got sucked in and it was over before I knew it. It's like 2 hours flew by.
Yeah.
I was just mesmerized by this film. And I think David Lynch, whether you love his movies, hate his movies, love TV, hate TV, you can't really look away.
He commands
the audience.
Yeah, this
attention.
Is the one I'd recommend to anyone who's interested in getting into David Lynch, who is like, I don't know where to start.
Yeah, but have an open mind and a steel stomach.
Yeah, Blue Velvet is where I would say that's probably his most accessible entry into his works.
I'd agree. Like I haven't seen as much as you have, you little addict, you. But I think I would really agree with that.
So final ratings. We'll do for our rating system. Which one do you want? We can do human ears, or we can do Kyle MacLachlan chicken dances.
Chicken dance.
So, okay, so on a scale of 1 to 5 chicken dances, how many chicken dances?
I think a solid 4 chicken dances for me.
Okay. Is there anything that held it back from the extra star?
I need to see it again.
Okay.
To be honest with you, it's nothing in particular. I just. You know when a movie just comes at you and you don't necessarily, you're just in it. You're not absorbing it. I would like to absorb it. And I will say once I watch it again, I really doubt my rating will go down. I think it will only go up. But I need some more time with this film. It's a lot to unpack.
Yeah.
For sure.
Understandable.
But I would swing between like a 4 and a 4.5. Pretty high rating.
I'd probably go ahead and give it a 5. And I was bordering between 4 and 5. But like... It sticks with, like I said, I saw it way back when. Mm-hmm. It was really the first Lynch movie that I was like, okay, I can wrap my head around it. I understand it. But watching it again, I think what struck me the most is just, and I've only just watched Wild at Heart and Lost Highway recently. So watching those movies, which are not his best works, and they kind of go all over the place, to see his vision so perfectly and flawlessly, those are the same word, I'll pick one, flawlessly executed, it's just incredible. And that you forget just how effective a filmmaker he is until you watch him firing on all cylinders. So I have to give it 5 of Kyle MacLachlan's chicken dances.
Perfect.
Perfect. So that's it. That's Blue Velvet in a nutshell.
Thanks for showing it to
me.
Yeah.
Thank you for watching it a year after.
Thank you for my Easter gift of 2017.
You're very welcome. What a wonder. And this is going up on Easter Sunday. There's nothing more.
Yeah.
There's nothing that says Easter bunnies or Jesus more than David Lynch's Blue Velvet. So if you'd like to talk to me about David Lynch, because I don't do it enough, clearly, find me on Twitter at YeShondorman. Again, I'd encourage you, if you like what you're hearing, to give us a 5-star rating on iTunes or wherever you're listening. It really helps us out. It gives us a boost. Share it with your friends who you think might like it. We really appreciate it, and we love all of you. Feel free to reach out at any point on Twitter. And then follow the Nerd Party in general. We have all sorts of cool stuff on there. It's at Join Nerd Party on Twitter and The Nerd Party on Facebook. Just like the page, and check out all the other shows at thenerdparty.com. And Sarah, thank you again for being a part of this.
Thanks for having me.
Yay. Velvet, bluer than velvet were her eyes, warmer than May her tender sighs.